Have you ever looked into the night sky and wondered, are we alone? We've learned so much about the world and our universe, and yet we realize there are so many mysteries yet unsolved. If you are interested in the unexplained and mysterious in our world, then join us in The Night Search, a forum for discussion and exploration of the world just beyond our reach. And now, your host for Night Search, Eddie Middleton.
Hello.
And welcome to our show. This is Eddie Middleton. My guest tonight is David Day, former co-host of Night Search, who has graciously agreed on 2 days short notice to come on to our guest tonight and tell his actual account of his own encounter with two angels. This is, I think, the best alien angelic intervention story that I've ever heard. David, thanks for being on with us. Something happened when they were running over from the last show, and this has never happened before, so we're on the air about 2 minutes late, but we're on.
Oh, that's good, Eddie. That's no problem. It's good to hear from you, and I think about this this story and what happened to me all the time. I think it has a little bit bigger, maybe, implications for me than angelology. However, it could certainly be interpreted that way, and most people do view it that way. How it's an extremely bizarre incident taking place in kind of mundane situation. So let me begin by telling you this is an event that happened on a Sunday, July the 3rd, 1977. This is 1 month before I left Morgantown, West Virginia, to study philosophy in graduate school at a Jesuit university, Otis University, West Mississippi River, St. Louis U, anyway. So I got a full scholarship here, and it was odd that no full scholarships across the country were being given the first year. I got in several other places, Northwestern, a number of colleges in New England. But so the hermeneutics of this is that this was my last month in a town where I'd spent a long time going to high school and college. And I was going to attend my friend's wedding. What?
You had just begun graduate school?
It was a month away. This is July the 3rd, a Sunday, by the way. July the 3rd, 1977. And in August, I was beginning graduate school.
Gotcha.
Studying philosophy.
21, 22, something like that?
Yeah. If the truth be told, I was 23 and a half.
Okay.
So, but I was in this state of mind, you know, where it's kind of euphoric that, I was going to get to pursue my goals and stuff. And so, this day, a very old friend of mine was getting married about 70 miles away from where I was. And I had a 1968 Volkswagen Fastback, and the transmission went out on it. So I had a ride to the wedding in Wheeling, 70 miles from where I was. But I didn't have a ride back. So back in those days, and in that area, if you had long hair and you could just stick your finger out, your thumb out, and hitchhike back. So I had a nice, attended the wedding, the reception, and I had to get someone to give me a ride back up onto the interstate. And this is in Wheeling. If you know anything about Interstate 70, it goes up a mountain, and you can, and my buddy let me out halfway up there. You could look down over the horizon. So I began hitchhiking, and, I was keenly aware of the sun going down, and I had a good look across the horizon, and I was getting a little worried because at night you're less likely, you know, to get a ride. And so back in these days, you could do these sorts of things. You know, we don't do these things today. But so a car would come by, and a car would come by, and trucks would come by. And the disk of the sun kept getting lower and lower and lower and lower. And it got to be where there was like maybe, you know, a minute of arc before it went below the horizon. And it would have been dark, and that would have been the end of the Sunday and so forth. So it was just, and the sun seems to set quicker, you know, on the horizon like this. And so just as it was about to blink out, and, you know, I was kind of a cultural Catholic, but, you know, I'm not, you know, I was not really a, you know, a bead-pulling Catholic. But so I just out of, just out of the vernacular, you know, I just out of being mad and pissed, I said, Jesus, you know, why have you forsaken me? Okay, and just then, just, you know, that just, and it's a vain comment, that was just before the final little arc of the sun blinked out. And I said that, and I'm watching it set, and then I notice right next to me, I mean, I'm off the road, and right next to me, I look down, and there's this black object, big, huge black object, and it just gotten dark, and I see a shiny handle. I swear to God, the thing materialized out of nowhere. There's the door handle, and it's not just as close as it can be without touching my hand. Is a black Mercedes, four door black Mercedes, darkest. You can't see in it, and the handle is just about touching. So I open it and I get in, and when the cabin lights come on, the strangest thing. This is 1977, but you see, there was a man and a woman, and they were like they could have been twins, man, and they could have been twins because they looked like 1954 robots. You know, like black rim glasses, very extremely nerdy looking. And when I got in, they didn't look at me, and they never looked at me. But when I got in, they didn't look at me, and I proceeded to introduce myself, and I said, I'm going to Morgantown. And the man uttered, without looking at me and pulling back on the road, he said, we know. We know. I said, oh, well, am I giving it away? I'm a hippie-looking guy or whatever. So they were saying to me. So they kept going. I said, I'm going to, thank you for picking me up and so forth. And I said, next month I'm starting graduate studying philosophy in St. Louis. And told my car had, you know, blown the transmission and I just needed a ride to Morgantown. And the woman said, we know. That's all she said. She never looked at me. She said, we know. So as we kept driving, it's about 70 miles, and at that time the Interstate 79 was not cut all the way through, but still it was not a very long drive. And I would try to make any kind of small talk or something, and they wouldn't respond. And I figured, well, they looked like robots. It was very strange. And when they said we know, I began to get a little thinking it was a little strange and wondering what was going on. So if I'd make small talk, they'd say nothing. But if I'd make a claim about my personal life in some way, one of them would say, we know. And so what seemed to be about halfway through the trip, I said, where are you going? And the woman said, we're chemistry professors at the University of Pittsburgh. And that's all she said. And I said, well, wow, you could let me off here at Waynesburg where it goes. And she said, no, you know, we'll take you to Morgantown. And that's about all they said. And they wouldn't look, they never looked right at me. And they drove very, very, very cautiously. And they just didn't look real. They looked really, both had the same nerdy look. Both had black, you know, framed glasses. And so they drove me right to my apartment, and when I said thank you, didn't say anything. I got out and shut the door, and as I walked by the passenger side window, the woman handed me a Cardinal Newman holy card. Now, Cardinal Newman is the Catholic saint of education. He's the stuffy Anglican bishop, and he's written books on Catholic education. But so she gave me this holy card, which is in my journal here. I'm looking at it right now, and it's a very odd holy card too. It's not like, you know, the BVM or some other Guadalupe or something, where or just any other saint, where there's sort of a portrait of the saint or even a photograph. This is this kind of funny, making fun of himself, kind of watercolory looking thing, and he's leaning over, smiling, and giving, you know, the about to make the sign of the cross. And on the back of the card, I'll read you the end of the card.
You got to read the back.
Well, I'm not going to read the whole thing on the back, but I'm going to read the last paragraph, which will give you some kind of an idea of how the rest of it went. It says here, "May death still find us on the sure road to our Father's house with the light of living faith in our hearts." Now, I'm on the road, okay? And I'm going home. And I just, you know, all of these kind of coincidences, and it was very, very strange. Now, the other part to this is it's about a 70, 75-mile drive, and back then it wasn't all interstate. However, you know, it's still, you know, like on a good day, hour and a half, hour and 15, 20. Eddie, as I said before, it seemed like I was in that car for 12 minutes, and I was home. Now, it was just right as that sun blinked out, there's a car in front of me. And I would have seen it coming. I'm facing the road. I didn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. I made the vain comment just as the sun went ploop, and there was a black Mercedes with the handle just not quite touching my hand, and me standing there. I didn't even see it come. I didn't hear it come. And I couldn't see it. It was jet black. And so, you know, I did get in. But, you know, I am interested in epistemology and, you know, how we explain some of these things like this. And so, you know, I view it as a bizarre event that I really can't explain. It's one of those where I've left a few things out, but you can tell it was kind of an eerie experience, and there were some time issues there. But the people were extremely, I don't know, they weren't scary. They were kind of creepy in a kind of positive way. You just, why are these people so weird? So then the next week, they didn't give me any names, but the next week, so I started looking in the University of Pittsburgh faculty lists that you can look up anywhere. Back then, it wasn't quite the internet. But and I kept looking for the chemistry department with a man and a woman the same name, or sometimes they'll say married. I found nothing like that. And even when I called the chemistry department, I said, "Oh, you have two faculty members that are married." And she said, "No, we don't." So...
Mm. But they didn't give you their name.
They did not give me their names. They barely said anything, but we know. In the important question and a personal reference, they said, "We know." And no, they never said anything, but handed me the Cardinal Newman holy card about, you know, being on the road and the sure road to our Father's house. You know,
when they dropped you off, did they drop you off right in front of your...
in front of my apartment. I was older then. I had an apartment. They dropped me off right in front of my apartment, and they drove around Morgantown. Like, I'd tell them where to turn, and they would get a little irritated because somehow they knew exactly, you know, every little turn in those little streets. And I just quit talking after a minute, and they pulled right up and stopped. So it was a little strange.
You really would have... gotten freaked out if you get ready to give directions to where to turn, and they said, "We know."
Well, they didn't say it, but they knew that I knew that they'd said it too many times. That's why they didn't say it. It's like they were pissed off because they knew. It was very, very, very strange. And, you know, I'm also, you know, for those of people listening who are into angelology, you know, you can't beat a St. Thomas Aquinas, you know, of course, here in the same Catholic kind of groove here we're in, Aquinas, in his genius, I guess, he took Aristotle's categories and he put an angel in charge of each one of them and started turning, you know, Aristotle into Catholic medieval theology. And so, you know, there's been a preoccupation with angels and angelology and, you know, the history of religion and the philosophy of religion. And, you know, I'm not sure what, because, you know, the people that we've talked to and interviewed over the years, that, you know, a definition of angelness or whatever is very, very, very a myriad of kinds of explanations. So it's hard really to put your finger unless you're saying, well, this is the Catholic tradition or so forth.
Yeah.
But an angel is a disembodied, non-corporeal entity. Descartes, halfway through the sixth meditation, when he's trying to say, how can I prove the existence of material things, which is the biggest scandal in the philosophy, Kant says, we can't prove the existence of material things. Descartes is wrestling with it, and he says, you know, there could be an evil genius, but there also could be a creature more noble than a body. In other words, you know, ET or alien intelligence that has evolved away from materiality. There's all kind of interesting things if you want to get into the philosophical or philosophy of religion and the understanding of angels. They're always non-corporeal, some kind of spiritual or mental, something that's not material. Creature.
By the way, did you notice her license plate?
Oddly enough, I think that I did not, because when I got in, I was not behind the car, and when I got out, they were turned so that when I got out, I'd be on the right side, and she forced me to walk by the passenger front side window where she gave me the card, and I didn't think about it at the time, getting the license. But it was so dark, it had been very difficult anyway because they left so quickly, and I was not in the positions to see the plate.
Okay, could you see their eyes? Y'all, did they have actual tenant?
Well, that's a good question. They never looked at me. They never turned their head and said anything to me. They, for the entire time, which is odd driving, their heads were faced perfectly toward the road, and when they said something, they wouldn't look at me. And they had, remember, I got a good look at them at sunset when the cabin lights came on, and the rest of it was like if you drive by a street light or, you know, along the interstate, the exits are lit or something, you could see a little bit, and they didn't, they looked really strange. They did not look, they looked a little bit mannequin-like.
Yeah.
And really, because they looked exactly the same, when the genders were different. Their hair was almost the same. Hers was very short. And they had black rim, you know, glasses on, like from the 60s, you know, with Barry Goldwater,
yeah,
or, you know, these people would wear that.
But they looked
They didn't look human. What? Go ahead. What?
They looked real professorial, you could say, perhaps.
They looked mannequinish. Their eyes wouldn't move. I don't think I ever saw them blink. Really?
Did they use any sort of accent?
No, they spoke with a little nerdy voices with very proper diction and very soft spoken. And the guy seemed to get somewhat irritated, as I said at the end, when I was giving him, as we're coming into Morgantown, I started, you know, okay, down University Avenue, you're going to turn right up the hill. And so he did that. And then after I tried to give him some more directions, the guy seemed to get a little bit irritated. And he was going to say, "We know." And I was supposed to, apparently, somehow, come to the realization that they knew where they were going without me telling them. And he was a little irritated. That's the only, she never showed any, never looked at me. She never showed any emotion. They looked like two mannequins driving around. It was very odd. Very
odd. Of course,
you
didn't get to shake hands with them.
No, and the guy kept his hands at 10 and 2 the entire drive, and the woman, like with her hands on her lap, they never moved. They just looked forward. Wow. They never moved their shoulders. He barely moved to turn the wheel. They were small people. His head was just above the steering wheel, and she was the same size. And I did my best to detective work to find if there were married couple teachers there at chemistry at Pitt. And, you know, I never was able to track them down in any way, and I never found any names. You know, even make sure it wasn't physics, you know. And so, but, you know, they were very, that thing, that big Mercedes just appeared out of nowhere, and they took me to my door. It was very strange.
Yeah,
very
indeed.
Strange. Yeah.
Definitely something paranormal about that.
Yeah, and after a while, I just sat there, you know, scared to say much of anything.
Yeah, so he didn't look back at you through the rearview mirror?
I never saw his eyes. I say for, it seemed like it was 12 minutes, but it's about a 75-mile trip. And his body never moved. I never saw his eyes glance in the rear view. I just saw his hands at 10 and 2, you know, and it was dark, of course, inside until you passed the light. And I got a very quick glimpse of him when the cabin light came on when I got in, and I thought they looked a little strange. But it was even eerier in the dark. They never looked at me. They never turned their. They never did much, you know, movement at all. Literally, I mean, it's strange.
Yeah, they definitely were not a pair of normal people.
No, they weren't. And it was a little, you know, it was a little scary because, you know, I just got the feeling that there was something I couldn't explain here going on. I didn't have a lot of power over it. It seemed like they knew where I was going, what I was doing. They stopped to intentionally pick me up. I never saw the car come. You know, you see the headlights. You know, when you're hitchhiking in the old days, you know, you see the headlights. Oh, I saw the sun just about to blink out in this big old almost limo Mercedes S-Class is sitting there. Very weird.
Yeah, the timing was very eerie indeed.
Yes.
Definitely something supernatural right there. Yeah. And right after you had said, "Oh, Jesus, why hast thou forsaken me?"
Yeah, well, you know, it was one of those kind of cynical, I was pissed off. Look, that's a bad place to be, is up in between Washington, Pennsylvania on a big mountain in Wheeling, West Virginia. And the sun is setting, and, you know, you need to get 70 miles down the road. And in the dark, it's almost, you know, you can't. I was mad and feeling a little bit hopeless. And I said, you know, it's like, Jesus, why have you forsaken me? And bam, just. And the odd thing, it was a Sunday. And, you know, sun setting is in religion. Like especially the Hebrew tradition, Christian tradition, you can celebrate, like if you want to celebrate a Sunday, you can celebrate after sunset on Saturday, or if you're a Hebrew, on Friday after sunset. The minute the sun goes down, it counts as your Sabbath. So there was only one little bitty few seconds of Sunday left. I mean, just a wink of Sunday left, and they showed up. Right as the sun went down over the horizon.
We do have a caller that has a question. Their name is Pat Ress. Maybe that must come out.
Yes.
Hello, Pat.
I know Pat. Pat Reese, yes.
She's got I got a question.
Hey, Pat, how you doing?
Fine. Do you remember I used to write for a newspaper in Louisiana?
Yes, yes I did.
Okay. There were a couple nuns. And I can't remember the situation, but they want me to do a story about them because they do readings, and they're into angels and that sort of thing, too. And what I wanted to comment on, one nun was telling me about her parents. There's this one road in Louisiana, and it's in southern Louisiana, and people report all kinds of strange things happening on it. But she said that was telling me that her parents had a flat tire, and they were quite elderly, and they were just sitting there wondering, what are we going to do? Because there were no cars on the, you know, it was a some odd time of day like you, okay, like sunset.
Yeah.
And she said there were three kids came by in a white convertible, and she said they looked like, well, her first impression was that they were cheerleaders for some athletic team. They were all dressed in white. They were very pleasant, very polite. They changed the tire for her parents, and the parents, the father, her father said, well, here, let me give you $5 or so, you know. And they said, oh, no, no, we don't need that. That's fine. And they said, well, we hope we haven't detained you or something. You know, they were just trying to be very cordial. And they said, no, that's fine. We're here to help. And they said that they had to be somewhere or something. And the three guys said, oh, yeah, we know. Only they were
dressed
in white instead of black. Yeah, and then they drove off.
Yeah, we know.
Same thing, yeah.
They're not bound by time, right? We know everything's just right now to us.
To tell you that. So.
Well, that's on the road, and abnormalities. Well, I thank you for that comment, and that leads me also to react to say that these people that looked like, you know, the same person, one male, one female, and they behave the same way. They were like a no-nonsense. These were like the no-nonsense angels. Like, I mean, they were there to do this, to pick me up and take me there.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it was almost like I was maybe number 7 on their list. They were very, didn't say much. They weren't mean or rude. But they weren't real warm and fuzzy. They were like all kind of all business, you know, all business and, you know, kind of like uncomfortable in their bodies, to literally, if I can say that, you know. It was really weird. A little scary, a little creepy. When it was over, you know, I made an entry in my journal I've got here in front of me with the holy card, you know, happy trails, you know. It's like...
They
Roy and Dale like, Evans.
Well, they sound a little like Men in Black, too.
A little bit.
Yeah, that's a question I had, considering that the sun just set, and it was like totally dark all of a sudden.
Yes.
And then here's this big black car right next to you. You might have had a few shivers like, gosh, what is this? Is this... something like a vampire's going to get me or something?
Oh, I was very, Oh, I was extremely reluctant to open the door. My first reaction is scared the shit out. Pardon me. It scared the crap out of me because there was no one on the road. I'm halfway up a mountain, and I'm looking down over Elm Grove, Wheeling, and it's in a bowl. And I see the mountains around it, you know, and there's not a car in the road coming at me. I'm looking for headlights, and I'm just staring into the nothing with the sun, you know, setting, and I've watched it go almost all the way down to the last few seconds of arc, and I didn't see any cars coming. I mean, and I would have seen them because I'm looking west, and I saw no headlights, and boom. It was right. The handle was as close as the handle could be without touching my hand. And I had a reflex action. I just opened it and got in. But I was a little worried because I don't know where they came from. I just didn't.
Oh.
You know what I mean? I mean, they had to pull off the road to where I was. I was pretty far off. And there were no headlights. There's no noise. No nothing. No engine noise. No nothing.
You would have seen the headlights approaching.
I would have seen the headlights coming, and I didn't. I didn't.
Did y'all pass other cars on the road?
That's the next thing. At the time that they stopped to pick me up, that's why I was in the, you know, a little pissed off, because there hadn't been any cars come by me on that interstate for 4, 5, 6, 7 minutes. and the sun was going down, and there was nothing. There was nobody else. There's nobody on the other side of the road. It was just ahead of an exit, so that, you know, I'd get it coming off of a big truck stop, but nothing was coming. Nothing. And
it
was remote.
You had probably a pretty awful feeling that you had been abandoned in some sense.
That's right. Forsaken in the dark.
Yeah, I hear you. We have another caller with a question.
Yeah.
His name is Ron Stone, and he's from Texas.
Okay.
Okay.
Hello,
Ron,
good evening, professors. I was wondering, I'll tell you a quick story, and I was wondering if your impression is that this happens more in preponderance to Catholics or whether it's more of a universal phenomenon for Christians. I've heard of this phenomenon with Catholics on many, many occasions. For example, there was a general in the U.S. Army in World War II who, after he studied the battle statistics of casualties in his army, at the end of the war he became a Catholic because he noticed that the Catholics were not being injured with any statistical significance. But I also have a close friend who's very spiritual, and her father and her brother are Lutherans, both of them ministers, in fact. And the story involving her was that she and her brother went to a restaurant one night, and in the parking lot they were followed out of the restaurant by a man who had a gun in a brown paper package. And he was just getting ready to pull the gun out of the package and rob them in the parking lot, when five children, perhaps 8 to 10 years old, something like that, looking characteristically like characters out of a Shirley Temple movie, a little bit out of place in their dress, started dancing up and down, holding hands.
Holy
and these
moly.
Five children danced around the man with the gun and
got his
attention. And at some point, one of the children grabbed the package with the gun in it, and they went dancing down an alley and disappeared. And he stands there with his mouth open trying to figure out what just happened. And when he realized he's now disarmed, he goes running down the alley to get away. And now, these were Lutherans.
Well, they don't call them Protestants for nothing, you know. So, I think I have heard something about that story that you just related there. I think I've not quite in the details you told, but I think I've heard that in some of those snippets of, you know, kind of the believe it or not thing.
I believe he's a minister in Minnesota, so you may have heard him tell the story himself.
Ah, well.
My friend lives in Arizona, though.
Well, to respond to the first part of your question, you know, there's a lot of Catholic dogma from the Curia about the saints, you know, can actively be involved in history. You know, so that is a Catholic. And, you know, Constantine seeing what they think is a meteor, but he saw it as a cross and one and so forth. But, you know, you'll find people in, cosmological dualistic faiths like Hinduism, Buddhism, you know, where their beliefs are that there are nature is pan with spirits. There's just spirits in every living thing. And even in these cultures where it's a different type of theology, you know, they still have these, you know, people looking like gods intervening and stuff. And so I think the if you just boil down the Christian and you know, the Protestants, the Lutherans especially, and the Scottish ones, they took a lot of this adoration of the Virgin and some of this other stuff that came out of the Vatican, they took that out. But you look throughout any Protestant, any Christian faith, and there's always angelic references. The Old Testament is just fraught and replete with that stuff, you know. And then when you look at other cultures that, you know, would be atheist, that doesn't mean they believe in God. They just mean that God is not separate from creation. The Christian argument is that God is separate, so we're theists if you're a Christian. But if you believe in cosmological dualism, you believe that God is not separate from creation, and that's a Christian heresy. However, even with these gigantic differences in principles, these angelic type incidents and creatures still pervade it all, you know, and even in Islam. So to answer your question, I think that the Catholic faith actually argues as dogma that the saints and whoever have made it through the saints to the angelic, the saints can be active in human history. So, you know, maybe the Catholics see more. I don't know. I'm just still trying to understand, you know, some of the things. I've got two or three stories like this that are just kind of mind benders when you just try to look at epistemology. You know, what on earth was that? You know, and then I get out of it and I feel like I've been in their car for like 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and it's dark the whole time and they're looking weird. And, you know, it's just, they pick me up. These two strange agents pick me up, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, did I ever tell you about that fellow I ran into one time in Canada? We were on a bus and we were coming from Montreal to Chicago. And it was late at night. And I remember I borrowed $1 from him because I had to take some medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get some pop to take the medicine with, you know, that type
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Yeah.
He loaned me $1 and we got to Chicago. We had a huge, long philosophical conversation on the bus. Anyhow, he got off the bus and I was right behind him and I had my hand in my pocket and I found $1 bill. And I thought, oh, well, I'll give this back to it, you know.
Yeah.
I hadn't been gone. My head was turned away from him for 2 or 3 seconds was all.
Uh-huh.
I could not find him anywhere. Anywhere. And I mean, I went looking all over. And I even asked one fellow, I said, where was the guy that was sitting with me?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, who are you talking about? I didn't see anyone sitting with you. And I mean, that
really
blew me away, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had a weird money one, too. I got...
oh, yeah, you got to tell that story. I remember now.
There are the ATM out there in Somerville, the Regions Bank. The line for the ATM was just, you know, backed up. So I went to the drive-thru and I wrote a check for cash. I don't know, it was for like $60. And the teller, she's in a hurry, and she gave me $80 to 420s. So, you know, I pulled through and I counted and I said, oh, God, I should just drive off. I'm in a hurry. You know, I said, no. But so I went back and got in line. At the which was still there's a pretty big line at the drive-through too, and so I got back up there, and same teller, and it took me about 10 or 15 minutes to get back, and I said, look, you put an extra 20 in here, and she says, well, thanks so much. I said, I didn't want you to be off later in the day tonight, you know, and so I sent her a $20 bill back through there, but it had this weird mark on it. This is in Somerville, Tennessee, you know. And it had, you know, right over George Washington's head, it had like a V drawn with a magic marker. It looked like maybe they were testing. But then it had some weird writing, like it had a phone number kind of you could read and a name. And it was very unique. I just sent that one back. So I had to drive that weekend to St. Louis. That's where my family is. So she was flying. I was driving. So right outside of Indiana, I pulled in for the night, and I put the card in the door. This was in Indiana, and in front of the freaking door was this $20 bill. I'm not lying to you. Just, you know, and it was like it was wet, like someone had been to the pool, you know, and it was the same damn $20 bill down to everything. I just,
oh my God,
yeah. And, you know, like, and that was like the it was just like the next day in Indiana. It was, oh, my God, you know.
Well, you know, the guy that I was riding with in Quebec from Montreal, We were talking about religion briefly, and he said, I'm a Catholic that is interested in Swedenborgianism.
Hmm.
I thought, what a weird combination, but
yeah.
Maybe not. You know, maybe, you know.
Well,
maybe he was telling me something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, well, of course, Swedenborg claimed to be, to have interacted with angels quite frequently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. That could have been. Maybe that was a hint, you know.
Well,
you know, alien
I was
encounters.
I'm interested in something that happened to me somewhere.
Could you share that?
Yeah.
Could you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, something had happened to me. I used to live in two cities at the same time, San Diego, California, and San Antonio, Texas. And so I made about 40 to 50 journeys across country by car. And the main road is Highway 10. And when you get into the San Antonio area, you have approximately a 70-mile drive across rocky mountains and lots of cedar trees. And there's no significant place to pull off. You're driving across the tops of mountains, and so there's just no flat areas to pull off, no villages there of any kind. And when I drove the first 1,200 miles, I was really exhausted. And when I got into the South Texas area, I hit a fog bank that was allowing my headlights at midnight to 2 a.m. to go about 6 feet and no further.
Mm-hmm.
And so my eyes were just getting too weary trying to find my way across this mountain road. And I needed to pull over somewhere before I just fell asleep and fell off the road. And it just wasn't happening for me. And the next thing I knew, I was looking at the top of the car, the roof of the car from the inside, and I realized I was laying on the seat of the car, and I jumped up real quick to grab the steering wheel again. And to my surprise, it was broad daylight. It was like 9 o'clock in the morning, and it was clear skies. The fog was gone, and I was staring at a 3-foot-wide oak tree. And so I got out of the car and looked at the front of the car to see just how badly I damaged it in the obvious collision with the oak tree, but there was no damage to the car. And so at that point, I just assumed something supernatural had happened and that I was dead. And so I started looking around the premises for my body, figured it had been thrown out of the car and I was just a ghost at this point. No such luck. I couldn't find anything wrong. So I looked at the road I was on, and it was a black, fresh asphalt road leading about 200 to 300 feet from Highway 10, just veering off to the right side and stopping for no apparent reason at this broad oak tree. And there was no purpose I could see in the road.
Other than you.
Yeah, I started the car, backed up on this one-lane vein of a road, got back on 10 and drove. Well, I made the same trip 5 or 10 times more, and I discovered that that side road doesn't exist.
Hmm.
End of story.
Hmm, how about that?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, they could just create a whole three-dimensional scene that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie, did I ever tell you about that guy? There's a fellow that I... dated, this is years and years ago, but he was originally from Texas, and he said that one night he was in a blinding rainstorm, and he thought he had seen a woman in the road, and then he couldn't see her, and he thought, oh my God, I've hit her, or I've killed her, or something. You know, he was really worried. So he stopped the truck, got out, he looked under the truck, looked in the ditches, and all over, no woman, you know. And he thought, well, I wonder where she went. And so he left car and walked about 30 feet up ahead, and the bridge had washed out. If he had just kept driving, he would have been in the river and drowned.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know if she was a warning or what, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's eerie. Oh, I got a chill here in this story.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty odd. I had something similar to that happen to me one time. I was actually fairly recently, too. I was living down in Florida. I was taking Highway 87 down to where I live, right off of it. And I go through this area where it's nothing but woods, but what's over there is also, like, military testing range for, like, aircraft to do, like, bombing and gun ranges and so forth.
Yeah.
And late at night. It's a really eerie place, and has a very rich Native American history in that area too. And as I was coming through in the middle of the night, me and my fiance were in the front seat driving, and it's pitch black. You can barely see anything in front of you. I have my brights on so I can see clearly, make sure no animals jump out, whatever. And I'm sitting there just talking to my fiance, and all of a sudden I have this weird feeling to look behind me. And in the seat behind me, I see there's this guy sitting in the back seat leaning forward. You know, I can just barely make out his face from the shadows in the back seat. But you can just simply see his face. And I'm like, whoa, where did this guy come from? You know, I have like this weird energy coming off of him, you know. And then the next thing you know, he just kind of disappeared as quickly as he showed up, you know. And shortly thereafter, we get out of that wooded area. I'm like, that is really weird. I don't want to go to that area ever again. So I don't know what that was about.
Ooh. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we got what? About 10 minutes left here. Do we have any other callers? I was going to ask David. Yeah, go ahead.
As of right now, we don't have any other callers.
Yeah, I was going to ask David if we have just enough time, he could share one other story, either the case of your father-in-law return for a little drink of scotch, or the one where you encountered Descartes in Paris here a couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, the Descartes one is a really kind of scary thing. And
the philosopher, therefore I am. Is that the
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I didn't think I was going to see a statue there out the Louvre. And I finally walked all the way around, and there he was. And this group of young kids, the story's too long, but a group of these kids came by. And this little girl answered this boy's question. He said to her something like, you know, I didn't think you were going to be here today. And that's what I was thinking about Descartes. And this little girl walked by and in French looked up at me and said, you are a fool if you didn't think I was going to be here. Anyway, it just goes on and on. But I'll tell you this quick one. my mother and my stepfather lived in the Golden Triangle in Florida, in Mount Dora, Eustis Tavares Mount Dora. And we would go down to visit him every summer. So when he went down there, he would always have this gigantic bar, wet bar, and a huge closet, and it was full of Glenfiddich scotch. I mean, just you could see the curvature of the earth going back through there. And, you know, this was like the mid-'80s. And so every evening he would make me go get the pour drinks. And he made a lot of money inventing a way to grind airplane jet engine blades when everybody's doing it by hand. And he retired. He sold it to McDonald's. Douglas. And I won't go into this, but so he retired early. So I said, John, you've got enough. And about the fourth 50 year, I said, John, you've got enough scotch here to last into the next century. And he said, well, you know what? That will last into the next century, but I won't. And he said, and that's going to all be yours. And he says, now when that last bottle of Glenfiddich is gone, and I said, well, you know, when the last Glenfiddich, or expensive malt, I said, I will be thinking of you when I drink the last of this. And he said, David, I will be there with you. And I thought nothing of it, you know. So he passed away, five, 6 years later. And my mother, a couple years after that, moved up to Memphis area where we were. And my wife and I went down there and moved the house, you know, her stuff out of the house and everything. And sure enough, there were a few cases of the scotch. Okay, so this was about the time we were doing that radio show, Eddie, 99, you know,
yeah.
98, 99. And this is because I told the story as it happened. And then, so in our house, there's a cupboard down there, and I looked in there, wanted a drink, and here it was. It was the last bottle of Glenfiddich scotch from Florida. And there was just, you know, about three or four fingers left in there, pour it over ice, you have it made, you know. And I just was looking so forward to this because it was the only booze in the house, and I really needed a drink. You know, I was, you know, teaching and got grading papers, and it was just... So I got a tumbler, and I put a bunch of ice in it, and I poured the scotch, every last drop of it, into this glass. I mean, and, you know, it hadn't been sitting around. It was dry. There was no condensation on the outside of it, you know. So I walked back to the other back of the house where my study is, and there's this, it's hardwood floor, but there's this rug where my desk chair is. And so as I was walking right up to the, to sit down with my scotch, the glass went straight up out of my hand. It went straight. I didn't fall. I was just moving toward, but the glass, as soon as I got it near the desk, the glass went up out of my hand as if it was levitating just real fast. It turned over in midair and came, this is a fact, it came down on that rug without spilling a freaking drop, and the ice was floating on the scotch. It was upside down on that rug. Just before, as I was ready to take a drink, it just turned upside down on the floor, as like it's a practical joke. Now, I've never dropped a glass of scotch, so, I mean, you know, now we're into the ghost area, right?
Yeah, I'll say.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that was a very strange, you know, my wife thought that was pretty strange, too. That was the last drop, and John had the, he had his little intervention there. I never got it. The devil or somebody got it.
Oh, that's a great story there.
Yeah.
So he definitely kept his word.
He kept his word, and it was a joke. I really always told him how good that scotch was. One other thing that's obvious that, you know, you've talked about before, Eddie, is, and some of the people on here, this call too, have, and, you know, this business of alien encounters and aliens in history and stuff. If you look at the Old Testament, you know, there are like angels or, you know, Hebrew wise people coming back with like a floor or a road that comes out of the clouds and all this stuff. A lot of these, you know, angel sightings and a lot of this angelology, there's a whole group of people who think that, you know, it's just extraterrestrial. I mean, you know, if you just want to have an open mind and think about everything, you know, that's been said too. So I don't, you know, talking about angels, which is the original when the show started, that is a really a tricky thing because it's shared among all cultures in different forms. And it, so there's something very universal about it. And that's about all I can come up with right now.
Oh, Eddie, remember that guy you had on that was from the Middle East? And he told you about
right.
his experience
he had an
with
angel.
The jinn?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this 7-foot-tall Arab guy with a white robe that was totally, you know, immaculate in the middle of the desert they gave a ride to, that had very weird piercing eyes, sat in the back seat, didn't say a word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was Raed. You remember Raed. And
yeah.
When it came to let him out, he opened the back door and let himself out, and the only thing he said was, may God be with you. And then disappeared because Raed looked around and couldn't see him, and he got out and looked everywhere around, just, you know, flat desert all around.
Yeah.
And he had literally vanished in the thin air.
Yeah. And he's an engineer, too. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess you could say that was an angel or
mm-hmm.
a ghost. Or E.T., uh-huh. There'd been a flying saucer sighting the day before at the radar base where he was leaving to go on furlough. So, But anyway, yeah, with some great stories. David, I sure appreciate you being on tonight, sharing that, and we'll have it in the archives. I want to get a CD of this. And I've had you tell the story, I guess, at least two other times, haven't I, on the radio?
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the very ambivalent, kind of scary. You don't know what to think. You're just part of it.
No, it's something about it. I mean, other, you know, angel intervention stories that are like more sensational and dramatic. But something about this, it's just something intriguing about it.
It is. And you know me. I'm very, you know, I look at everything. So if I say this was bizarre and I don't know what the hell happened, then I'm, you know, it's bothering me badly. They just drove off. Like, just drove off and it's a black car. Like, just, like, you couldn't only 10 feet, and it disappeared. You couldn't even see into the blackness. Just 10 feet, and it was gone. They were gone. And there I am with Cardinal Newman. What?
When they dropped you off at your apartment, did you watch them as they drove off?
I did, because I just passed the passenger side where she gave me the card, and as soon as she gave it to me, they drove off. And there were no, the street lights were far apart there at that part of town, and It seemed like they disappeared into just a black cloud. You couldn't, no taillights, no nothing, gone. Very businesslike.
Really? Well, David, we're out of time.
Yeah.
The
All right.
The are coming on here, so thank
yeah.
you again.
Okay.
For our show tonight. And thank everyone
yeah.
for listening.
Yeah. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.